Hello, hello, there we go. Well, today we are continuing our series in the book of James, and we're actually jumping ahead to chapter 5 today, and the next week we'll come back to chapter 4. But for today, Youth Sunday, Jim asked me to preach on patience, and I think he did that because he knows I'm a youth minister and I'm a Cubs fan. You've got to have patience for those two things. This is one of those topics that's important for everyone, because I don't think anyone in here hasn't struggled with patience in the last week, let alone your entire life. You would think that more of us would be patient because of all the time we spend waiting in life. Think of something simple. Going to a fancy restaurant. You wait five different times. You wait to get a seat, and you wait for the menu, and you wait for food, and wait for the bill, and so on. They call the guy the waiter. It doesn't make much sense. You're the one waiting. Think of some of these statistics. The average American spends 2 weeks of their lives sitting at stoplights, about a year of their lives waiting in line, and as for waiting in general, about 45 to 60 minutes every single day waiting on various things. That translates to about 5 full years of your life. But as everyone in here knows, just because you wait a lot doesn't mean you're a patient person. In the book of James, we see a great description of when to be patient and why and how to be patient. But before we dive into the text, I want to discuss God's overwhelming patience for us. Because I think if we can understand how patient God is with you and me, it's going to help us as we move forward with this topic. And I'll begin with a story. A few years ago, I was having all kinds of car problems. Has anybody been there before? My car would die in the middle of a busy intersection, and I'd have nothing to do. You know, eventually when we got it into the shop, they would tell us what the problem was, and I would pay my money, and I'd be on my way. The thing was, it kept coming back, whatever the problem was. It happened over and over. I was losing patience with these people. Evidently, they were wrong in their assessment of what was actually wrong with my car. Eventually, you know, they'd say, oh, we found something different this time, or we found something different that time. And never thought I'd be saying this, but luckily, I got in a car accident that totaled my car shortly after that. And I got rid of that problem altogether. But my point of this story is this. I'm sure we've all been there before, where it is extremely difficult to be patient when people have wronged you. Thankfully, my God is a patient God. Every time I would get my car back and it would act up again, I would kind of look at it and say, I thought you were fixed. I don't normally talk to my car, but that day I was. And I kind of wonder, though, how many times has God looked down at our life when we have sinned, and then we've asked for forgiveness, and then we've sinned again and again? I wonder how many times he wants to tell us, I thought you were fixed. But the reality is, he is a patient God. It's amazing to know that every time we fall, he's going to pick us back up. I think in a lot of situations, we have prodigal son type of moments. And just like in that story, God is there waiting on us to come back, and he's going to show great joy when we actually come to our senses again. I'd like to share another story with you. This is also a true story. Happened many years ago. There was a little boy who convinced his mom that he would take care of a puppy if they went and got one. So they went to a pet store, and he looked around for a few minutes, and then he finally said, I want that one in the corner. Well, the owner of the store said, no, you don't want that one. Pick another one. And the boy kept saying, no, I want the one in the corner. The owner was losing patience with the boy because he genuinely thought that he wouldn't like that puppy. So he said, I want to tell you why you don't want that puppy. That puppy is crippled. Its legs don't work. It won't be able to run and play like the other puppies do, so you don't want it. But when he said that, the little boy lifted up his pant leg and showed him a large brace on his leg, and he said, I want the puppy in the corner. Now, the moral of this story is that the very thing that makes us impatient with others sometimes, the very thing that disqualifies us from being chosen by other people, is the very thing that makes God choose us. You know, you could have a life or a past that in your eyes is just unrepairable, but our mistakes are never too much in the eyes of God when we return to him. He chooses us, he forgives us, despite the things we've done, the things we've said, and the things we've thought. And it's really an overwhelming kind of love that my God could be patient with me, even though I failed him time and time again. Sometimes I think we feel like the puppy in the corner. And we feel like, oh, surely I can't be chosen. I've done too many bad things, and I'm not as good as everyone else. But grace tells another story. In Romans, it says, God is a God of patience and comfort. And, you know, story after story in the Bible, we see of people who were caught in adultery, people who had murdered others, people who had disobeyed God their entire life, and we still see a forgiving and patient God waiting on them. And it's because of that love, is why I think we need to respond with patience of our own. So, what are some things we get impatient with? If I were to ask that to all of you, we'd be here all day coming up with things. I decided to bring in a few of my own, and if we could go ahead and pull up that first one. Tell me if you remember this awful noise. It's coming, there it is. Dial-up internet, anybody? Yeah? All right, you can turn it off. That's enough. It's, you know, some of you may still have dial-up internet, but for the most part, it's high speed nowadays, and, you know, when that was first here, I was cool with it, but now if I had to go to that, you know, when my browser doesn't load in 5 seconds, I get impatient. Let's pull up another one. Who knows this sound? Waiting on the phone.
Please continue to hold the line, and your call will be answered as soon as possible.
Operator. Who gets impatient with that? How about when your call gets dropped or the person doesn't help you anyway? That's frustrating. Let's pull up one more. This is a video. The good old traffic jam. Who gets impatient with the traffic jam? Every hand should be out this time. Evidently, the person driving this car likes elevator music, but that can be frustrating. So, these are just a few examples. I wanted to get you good and mad for this. These things were easy to visualize, okay? But what about the things that are much more important in life? Like finding a job when you desperately need the money. Finding a spouse or new friends when you feel alone. How about being patient with God as you wait for His plan and His purpose in your life? I'm going to start unpacking this text. It's in James chapter 5, verses 7 through 12. And I've got a pretty lengthy video that I'm going to show towards the end of the sermon. So with that in mind, I'm going to be hitting these bullet points relatively quickly. So if you want to follow along, get your pen ready and let's rock and roll. You guys ready? All right. The first answer, or first question, I should say, that I'm going to be asking is, according to this text, when should we be patient? And the first answer is, when circumstances are uncontrollable. Chapter 5, verse 7 says, "Be patient, then, brothers, until the Lord's coming. See how the farmer waits for the land to yield its valuable crop and how patient he is." If anybody would know about patience, it would be a farmer. I mean, they have to be patient in their job. But one thing you'll notice, a farmer can't control everything. There's a lot of things a farmer can't control. Can't control the weather, can't control the economy, labor practices, and so on. In Palestine, where James is referring to, they didn't have very good farmland. So farmers had to be extra patient. In life, there's a lot of circumstances that are out of our control. But this text says, even in those times, we are told to be patient. The next answer of when to be patient is when people are unchangeable. This is a big one for us. Verse 10 says, "As an example of patience in the face of suffering, take the prophets who spoke in the name of the Lord." Basically, this text is saying, whenever you feel discouraged, that when people, coworkers or friends or family or whoever, you just can't, they just won't change. The text here is saying, remember the prophets. Remember what they had to go through, all the things they had to face to try to bring people back to God. And their patience paid off with many people, and ours will too if we're patient. The third and final answer of when to be patient, according to James, is when problems are unexplainable. Verse 11 says, "You've heard of Job's perseverance." Many of you know the story of Job. He was the wealthiest man on the planet, and in a matter of 2 days, lost everything but his wife. When his wife wanted to curse God for what had happened, Job refused. And that is another wonderful example of patience when we face troubled times. So we've talked about when to be patient. Now let's discuss briefly why we should be patient. First answer here is because God is in control. Verse 8 says, "Be patient and stand firm because the Lord's coming is near." This is kind of interesting. The Bible actually talks more about the second coming of Jesus than it does the first. So with that, we can have great expectation of when that day is going to come. But if you try to control things, it's back to the farming example. Try to control the weather, I dare you. It's not going to help. It's just going to make you more stressed out than before. We've got to give God all the control. I want to compare and contrast something for you. The difference between a Christian and a non-Christian is that a Christian at some point in his or her life has come face to face with Jesus and said, "Not my kingdom, but yours. I sign over ownership and give it to you. Be the Lord of my life." And then through that, God's promises and his Spirit, he says, are going to fill us. It's going to begin to mold and shape us. It doesn't mean we're a finished product, but we begin to see his kingdom principles through all this. Now you may ask, okay, what are his kingdom principles? Well, if you were to read about what Jesus taught about his kingdom, you would see some wild and crazy and radical things. One example, he would say, when others mock you, the natural way of responding is not my way of responding. Couple more examples, see if I find my notes here. When someone takes your jacket, give them your shirt too. You know, oh, and by the way, your enemies, the people that hate you, I need you to love them. I need you to pray for them, even when they persecute you. He wasn't just saying these things for fun. You know, he was saying these things because it was contrasting our kingdom with his. And when we came face to face with Christ for the first time, and we gave him rights to our kingdom, that means that we shouldn't try to get it back. And all the situations that come up, they're out of our control, and we still try to control it a little bit. We're not supposed to. Give that to God. The second answer on why we should be patient is God rewards patience. In Matthew chapter 5, Jesus says, "Blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven." Now this point is really going to be shown in the video that we're going to show, but we just got to know the patience that we have is going to be rewarded by God. We also need to strongly consider something. When we lose patience, we can lose our witness easily. I love the true story. There was a man driving along. He came up on a stoplight, and there was a car in front of him. And the little green arrow came up. It was time for them to go, but the car in front of him didn't see it in time. It was one of those quick arrows. We love those, don't we? So it goes red, and this guy is mad. He rolls down his window. He starts honking. He starts swearing at the guy. What he didn't know was there was a policeman two cars behind him. And the policeman was a Christian, and he wanted to prove a point to this guy. So he pulled him over. The guy said, "Why'd you pull me over? I didn't do anything." And the policeman said, "Well, I noticed you got really mad at that guy. You were swearing at him and honking at him. And then I saw your little Christian bumper stickers, and I realized this car's probably been stolen." What a great example, though. When we wear the name of Christ, we need to be honoring him with our actions and lifestyle. Our witness can go right out the window, along with our patience, if we don't have any. Lastly, I want to discuss how to be patient. There's three answers for this that include wait expectantly, wait quietly, and wait confidently. One of my favorite stories in the whole world is a story that we find in John 21. Jesus had just got done telling Peter of the death that Peter himself would have to face as a result of following Jesus. And when he said that, Peter basically said, "Well, what about them? What about those disciples? You know, are they going to die too? Or, you know, can they die in my place?" And Jesus' response to him was, "What is that to you? You follow me." And that needs to be our response. In every situation, follow him. And that means whatever path he chooses for your life. That means in good times and bad times. That means being patient with his plan and his purpose, even if you don't understand what that ultimately is. That also means not worrying about what other people have and why they have this life and that life and why you have this life. Jesus responds to you as well. Don't worry about them. You just follow me. That's all you got to do. I'm going to show a Pneuma video at this time. And we watch a lot of these Pneuma videos at youth group. And it's kind of a weird thing to do for a sermon to show such a lengthy video, but I think the point in this video is really what we're trying to drive home with patience. So check out the screen, and I'll be back to wrap up the sermon afterward.
The mall with my family, and we were walking down the middle. And we were noticing those kiosks. Have you seen these before? Because there isn't enough stuff for sale at the mall. So there have to be these kiosks on wheels where they can sell more stuff. And we're noticing this one kiosk in particular, because it has every sort of gadget and toy and contraption you can imagine in every color under the sun. And we notice that they're selling this sports ball toy apparatus thing, and the salesperson says, would you like to try it? And I was like, sure. So he straps this thing to my wrist that's connected to like this elastic cord that's connected to a ball. And the purpose, they tell me, is you're supposed to take it and throw it, and then it goes out and it comes back and you catch it. And so, of course, I take it and I just chuck it, and it comes back and it hits me in the face. And I turn to my son, and I'm like, hey, do you want to try it? And he's like, no. It's like he sees dad making a fool of himself. And the salesperson is like chattering away about how people use this as a stress reliever. My wife and I are like laughing, and we just walk away. Yeah, whatever. But my son, he stands there and he says, I want one. And we're like, no, we're leaving, we're going. And he's like, but I want one. Like, no, it's got like this cord, it's got this strap thing, you'd get all like tangled. No, we gotta go. He's like, no, but I want one. Now, a couple weeks before this, we had been at this school near our house. On the playground, somebody had left some kickballs, probably from recess or something. And so we had been throwing and kicking around these kickballs with my boys, and my wife and I had commented on how we ought to go get the boys a kickball. I mean, every boy needs a kickball, right? And so earlier that day, we had decided, you know, after we leave the mall, let's go across the street to the sporting goods store and let's get the boys a kickball. But right now, my son is standing there at the kiosk saying, I want one. And by now, my wife and I have probably walked 50 feet down the mall from the kiosk, and my son is standing there, and he looks up at what to him is this massive wall of toys, and he says, but I need it. And so me, in a moment of sheer parental brilliance, decide that I'm going to reason with a 2.5-year-old from 50 feet away. So I start laying out my case, like, you don't understand, it's going to get wrapped around your wrist, it's not going to work, it's going to break, it's going to fly, it's going to hit you, it's not going to fit. And he just looks at me with this look, maybe you've seen this before, he looks at me with this look like, but I thought you said you loved me. I'm like, don't do this to me. And I'm sure the salesperson is thinking, like, tightwad, dad, like, loosen up, it's like $7 and your kid's having a breakdown here. So I have to walk all the way back, and under great protest, I have to pick him up and carry him out to the car. And so we enter the sporting goods store. My radar is up and I locate the sports ball section. And there are basketballs and footballs and soccer balls. And eventually we come to the kickball aisle. And the kickballs are stacked there, red and blue and yellow and green. And there's the smell of fresh rubber in the air. You know what I'm talking about. It's that smell of a good new kickball before it's broken in. So we take our son up to the wall of kickballs, and he stands there and he looks up. And with great joy, I say to him, take your pick. And his eyes get big and he points and he says, the orange one. And so with great joy, I take the orange one down off the shelf and I hand it to him. Here you are, my son, with whom I am well pleased. And then I say, shall we take a march of triumph? A victory lap, if you will. And so the Bell family, with my son holding the kickball in front of him, patting it, saying, the orange one, the orange one. We take a march of triumph through the sporting goods store, out of our way, for my son has an orange kickball. But the point isn't the kickball, is it? I mean, what if that was my goal for my kids, that they had more things and better things? That's not the point, more stuff. No, the joy for me, the point for me, is in my relationship with my boys. It's in our interactions, in our connection. The joy for me is when we talk about the things that matter to us. So my kids, they ask me for stuff all the time, and I love to give them what they want. but I don't always. Sometimes I say no. It's not because I'm like cruel or mean or anything, but it's because their perspective's limited. There's stuff they don't see that I see. There's stuff they're unaware of. I mean, what if they actually got everything they asked for right when they asked for it? Some of the stuff they asked for would make them miserable. Other things might be great someday, but just not now. And so I say no. And so sometimes they give me this, "I thought you loved me" look. And I'm left saying, "Well, you gotta trust me on this." Everybody? Here. See, I could create this safe little bubble of a world for them where they always get everything they want right when they asked for it, when they were protected from everything. But it wouldn't be much of a life, would it? Sometimes we ask God for things, and then when we don't get them, and God doesn't deliver, we think that there must be something wrong with God. Or maybe you've been asking God for something for a while, and you still don't have it. And your question is like, how long? How long do I have to wait for this? When is God going to deliver? And maybe God's perspective is, how long? How long till you see that there's a bigger perspective here? Or maybe you're like me. Sometimes you have the sense of, God, if you just give me this, then I'd be okay. Then my life would be okay. You can fill in the blank, whatever your this is. God, if you just give me this, then everything would be okay. And God's like, no, it wouldn't. Or maybe you have this sense of, God, if you just give me this, then I'd be happy. And maybe God's like, no, you wouldn't be happy. It'd get all wrapped around your wrist and it'd hit you in the face and you wouldn't enjoy it. We often have our own ideas of what would be better, don't we? And so we expect God to agree with our idea of what would be better, but God's idea of better is better, isn't it? And I don't know why there's so much pain and confusion in life. And I don't know how God can stand it. But I do know the question is, do I believe that God is good? I mean, do you, deep in your bones, what do you really believe God is like? Because until we each deal with this question, then nothing's ever going to make any sense, is it? And Jesus said, "Who of you, if his son asks for bread, would give him stone, or if his son asks for a fish, would give him a snake? If you, man, you're human, you're flesh and blood, you're flawed. If you know how to give good gifts to your children, how much more will your heavenly Father give good gifts to those who ask him?" So when you find yourself standing at the kiosk asking, "Why can't I have what I want?" May you believe that God is good and that across the street he has something better.
Many times in life we act like the boy in the video. When we think we know what we want, we think we know what we need, when the whole time God is the one that knows. And sometimes in life we don't figure out until later on what God actually had in store for us. But when we can develop patience and when we can understand that God is in control, eventually we're going to see what it is across the street waiting for us. There's a passage in Philippians that I love. Paul says he was trying to go from town to town to preach, but one of the towns he got thrown into prison. And he said the gospel actually got advanced more when he was in prison. And you may ask, well, how does that happen? He was trying to preach in town to town. Well, the townspeople that were there, the prisoners, the guards, all got to hear about Jesus when they wouldn't have previously been able to. And the point I want to make with this passage is that even though God's plan and Paul's plan were a little different at the beginning, Paul was patient with what God was trying to do, and he still did God's work. And my question today is, what is our response? Is that our response? Are we like Paul? Because I want to make one thing very clear. The band can come on up. I want to make one thing very clear today. Having patience does not mean that you can't do God's will today. A lot of people, when they think of patience, they think, okay, this is kind of a cop-out. I'll wait till later on to do things. God will reveal his will for my life later on. And I do believe that God will reveal things to you later in life. But I also know he has a will for you now, today. There's this line in the movie Evan Almighty that I love. Morgan Freeman, who plays the role of God, tells someone in the movie, if you ask God for patience, does he give you patience or does he give you a chance to be patient? I think today, even on the car ride home, many of you will have a chance to be patient. But the best news of all that I can give is that one day Jesus is going to rip through that sky. He's going to take us home with him. And we can expectantly wait for that day to come while still doing his work here. If you want to make a decision today, feel free to come forward. Maybe you need a lot of help with patience in your own life, whether it be with God or with other people. Maybe you want to accept Christ in your life for the first time because you've understood that all the things I've done in the past, he's still patient with me. He's still waiting for me. Maybe you just simply need prayer. Whatever it is, I invite you to come forward as we stand and sing.